You know, I've seen a lot of the state. I was in Barrow in January to talk to folks. I made several trips to Bethel, and the last one I hopped in a riverboat with a local leader named Mike Williams. He's an Iditarod musher and a sobriety leader there in the YK Delta. We got in his skiff and went upriver to Akachak and then Akiak, where he lives, and I helped him pull shefish out of his net in the Kuskokwim River. So I've been traveling a lot and trying to get some flavor of rural Alaska and still sort of maintain a strong presence in, you know, Ketchikan, Sitka, Anchorage, Fairbanks, you know, mm-hmm. the urban centers.
Mm-hmm. Working the rural trap line out there. I wonder when you're out there, and even when you're in Sitka, what are you doing to kind of distinguish yourself from Ethan Berkowitz? I mean, to some people who are kind of outside politics, mm-hmm. outside Juneau and Anchorage, you and the former minority leader must look alike.
We're not that far apart politically on a lot of issues, it's true. Although he began talking about a unusual idea for reforming oil taxes several months ago on his website and then through a Compass piece, and it came to a head probably 3 weeks ago with a front page story in the Daily News highlighting our differences on oil taxes, how we pay for the things that we want to do for the state, like renewable energy and education. You know, it's how you pave the roads. It's how you make sure the state has, you know, state troopers where it needs them. It's a big, big issue.
All right. Where are you on oil taxes? Are you still for the profit based system now?
You know, we struggled mightily in 2006 and 2007, most specifically, to put a fair oil tax on the books. And we had what I would call a unique moment in time when the FBI raids on legislative offices and the arrest of legislators created a space in which we could work free of the intense lobbying you frequently get from the oil industry when matters like these come up. Even so, it was an enormous effort. I was there, and you know, we were bleeding ulcers. We were up all night. It was hard work to push a major oil tax bill through that legislature, and we did it. And we, you know, it's a good thing we did, because in 2008, when oil prices hit $145 a barrel, we had a fair oil tax in place, and we reached out and saved $5 billion put away into savings, which is something that's largely gone unheralded.
I guess I basically conclude from that the petroleum profits tax would be something, as governor, you would continue to protect.
It's working very well, and we saw just last week with the release of the ConocoPhillips quarterly report that they continue to make strong and robust profits right here in Alaska. ConocoPhillips earns more from Alaska in relationship to its percentage of production than it does in other places. That is, you know, something like 10% of its production here nationally produces, say, 25% of its profits. So Conoco's doing well. The state's doing well. Don't change it.
I was thinking about asking you what the tax scheme would be for gas coming off the North Slope, but is gas even a reality in the term of the next governor?
You know, it is. You know, we're going to face a major hurdle when we see the results of the bids that have been submitted under AGEA to put gas in that pipeline. And most observers believe there are going to be, you know, difficult questions for the state to face over its taxes. It's like we, the state, are putting our house up for sale, and we think our house is worth, say, $500,000. And when we open those bids, I don't know what the industry is going to offer, but my guess is they're going to offer about $250,000. And if you want to give the state's resources away for $250,000, they'll take it right now. Sign the papers. Come on, let's go. Let's build a pipeline. But if you want to negotiate hard and get $495,000 for that house, you need someone who's accustomed to dealing in a strong way with the oil industry as your governor, and that's something I think I have a good track record on.
Does AGEA give the next governor the latitude for that kind of negotiation?
That's something that's going to have to take place between, frankly, you know, the governor and the oil industry and then the legislature.
Senator French, let's talk about Southeast a little bit, because you mentioned Senator Gukesh introduced you down in Metlakatla, was it?
Yes.
Senator Gukesh is going to be facing a judge one of these days about a federal subsistence and state subsistence conflict that he perceives in the region. At this point, I haven't sensed from the current governor that there's been much desire to step up policy or any rhetoric over the issue, but it's something that could mm-hmm. could flare mm-hmm. during the next governor's term.
I think this governor is on what I call a glide path mm-hmm. to November. He just assumed that nothing, you know, disrupts his glide path. And so he's been remarkably quiet on many issues.
All right. Well, I don't know when Senator Kukesh is going to get to trial, but when it does happen, it's going to reignite, if not in Juneau, certainly among a lot of people living out here in subsistence-qualified communities, interest in the lack of movement on federal and state subsistence.
It's a statewide issue, really, and so we've, you know, I've thought about it for a long time. When I entered the legislature, I was in favor of a rural subsistence priority. I continue to be in favor of one. It makes most sense to me that the people who live closest to the resource should have first access to it in times of scarcity. It's just common sense. And to me, I would push that as hard as I could. And if you can't do it through a constitutional amendment, which is really the bottom line for us as a state to get in line with the federal government, then you try to implement policies through statutes and through your regulations that emulate that. Of course, without crossing, you know, then you're still going to be in conflict with our state constitution. So it's a balancing act.
Is that position still relatively unpopular in Anchorage and the Rail Belt, this rural subsistence priority, or has over the years, as federal management has you know, continued to kind of build, have you sensed any kind of moderating in the legislature, maybe an amendment is the way to go?
You know, it's interesting. We haven't tried it in a while. It may be time to try again. It's something I think a lot of folks, you know, when I got in the legislature in 2002, it had been tried, you know, in successive years for, you know, the past 6 years, you know, 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, and so forth. And I think folks just got tired of beating their head against the wall and became accustomed to federal management and dual management and realized that it wasn't the end of the world. Whether we could do it again now, it may be possible. It may be possible as we think about redrawing our district lines to allow for sort of what I would call stable rural representation as the number of seats goes up to accommodate our increase in population. You know, the idea is to go to, I think, 22 senators, 44 representatives, and to, you know, those new seats would go, frankly, to Wasilla, but it would allow for the current representation in rural Alaska to stay the same. And here in Southeast, you face the same issues. You could easily lose representation if we don't do something and leave you with fewer voices to represent Sitka, Ketchikan, and the smaller communities without a change to the Constitution.
Let's talk about redistricting for a moment. What role do you see the governor playing in redistricting?
The next governor will only play a role if this one botches it so badly that the plan is thrown out and has to come back for new lines. This governor has appointed, you know, his three positions to the board, or his two, I'm sorry. His governor gets two, speaker gets one, president of the Senate gets one, and the Supreme Court gets one. That makes five. And they've been appointed, so this board's in place. They'll draw up a plan, and, you know, it remains to be seen whether they draw a fair plan or one that is legally challenged.
Senator, I think something that's probably a major event since you've last visited at least the studios of KCIW, might be the Deepwater Horizon, the BP oil spill. Has that influenced or shaped your opinion about offshore oil leasing in Alaska?
It certainly has. Yes, it has. This year, we made a strong push to put a coastal zone management program back on the books. It's something that Frank Murkowski gutted during his time as governor, and it became clear as the industry began to pick up the pace in OCS, offshore of Barrow and in the Beaufort Sea and Chukchi Sea, that we needed to have some aspect of local control before that took place. And the mayor of Barrow came to Juneau, was rebuffed by the governor, and, you know, the governor just would not reach out and reach a compromise. When the spill began, a few days later, Senator Donnie Olson from Nome and I sent the governor a letter and said, please, in the wake of this spill, rethink your opposition to coastal zone management. Think about how some local input could have seen the flaws in their spill plan, could have seen the flaws in their drilling plan. And the governor, of course, has been non-responsive. He does not want to get sideways with the oil industry. And it's a big mistake because I worked on the North Slope 8 years of my life at Kuparik as a blue-collar worker. And there was enormous amounts of expansion done then, all under the auspices of coastal zone management. All it means is some aspect of local control, not a veto, just a voice.
Senator, I think it's fair to say we're on the home stretch here towards the primary. I think Representative Berkowitz probably has more money to spend. He announced today he's not going to buy TV ads. Your war chest isn't quite as large. What's your strategy between now and August 24th?
We've got a great media strategy. We'll be running TV, radio, mail. We had 15 enthusiastic people waving signs this morning in Anchorage at a street corner to celebrate the first day of early voting. You know, I'm in Sitka, and the team is operating in Anchorage. A couple of weeks ago, we had postcard writing parties in Fairbanks, in Anchorage, in Juneau, and two people here in Sitka at the same time. And so we've been harnessing the power of people and making it work. And I've got all the money I need to complete this plan. I'm very happy about the way it's going.
Thank you, Senator French.